Right, off we go.
I was born during the Second World War in the Yetman Hospital in Sherborne. And I came back to Millbourne Port when I was just a few days old. And I lived with my mother, my grandmother, my aunt, and two evacuees, because, of course, the war was on. And we lived in a house called Tol Pedden, which means the fiery hole, I believe, in Cornish. Mm-hmm. It's now called Springfield House. And between Springfield House and Basilways, there were just two red brick cottages which belonged to Basilways, but there were no other houses. And looking across West View, one could see Manor Road and one could see Boughton's Orchard. But there were no other houses on the hills. And of course, the only thing down in the valley was our factory, which was Thomas Ensor, later to be changed to Ensor Southcombe. Now, everybody in the village, as far as I knew, and practically all my young life, everybody worked either for Thomas Ensor's or for Dykes. And Thomas Ensor's went to the church and voted Tory, and the Dykes went to the Methodist church, which was absolutely thriving, and they voted for the Liberals, as far as I can understand. And I lived with my grandmother, and of course there was rationing on. And I do remember that there was one room, her sitting room, and we had a coal fire there. My aunt, who was getting married, was making her trousseau out of parachute silk, and I was playing with my toys on the floor. My grandmother knitted. She knitted, I think she was probably knitting socks for, I don't know, the army or people who needed socks. And the two evacuees were always making things. It was always sort of doing useful, good works for people. And then in 1947, my family bought back a big house in the middle of the village called Cross House, which had belonged to the family since before 1900, when my grandfather bought it from the Medlicott family. And in 1947, it was decided to turn it into three flats and let the flats on a commercial basis, just to bring money into the family trust.
Yes.
And Mummy announced that she would like to have the middle flat for me and herself. And everyone said, why on earth do you want to do that? Because you must be happy living with your mummy. Well, she was, but she wanted to have her own home. She'd always had her own home before she joined the army to do her bit during the war, and she rose to the rank of major. So we moved to Cross House. And that was really my home all the time until I went off to London to find fame and fortune when I was 17. And the flat was very big and it was very comfortable. And of course, Cross House garden was absolutely huge. It had been two tennis courts and a big walled kitchen garden and a paddock and stables and the gardener's cottage and a huge orchard down one side. And there were trees to climb and walls to run along. It was just heaven. Now, in 1947, I remember distinctly, it was the 5th of November, and we were standing on a single story. My mother called it the deck. It was just a single story which jutted out at the back of Cross House, and it was open to the elements, and you could stand outside and you could see all the way down the garden and up and down as far as Dyke's factory, because that was just over the fence. And we were having a bonfire because, of course, it was Guy Fawkes. And there were wonderful rockets going off everywhere. And my uncle Hector, who was in charge of the factory, he was the managing director there, said, you know, there's one thing I really enjoy, and that is a good blaze. That night, a rocket hit the wool store of our factory, and a fire started.
Heard of this. Yes.
And it was the most monumental fire. It did thousands and thousands of pounds worth of damage, and it crippled us for a very long time. The factory was rebuilt, but it caused an enormous amount of disruption, not only for my uncles, but also, of course, for all the workers,
yes.
which was terrible. Mm. But we survived and carried on. Now, in my childhood, Millbourne Port was a thriving village. You never needed to venture to Sherborne, let alone Yeovil. There was every shop you could possibly think of. Excuse me. There were two butchers. There was the baker's, which was fantastic. On a Saturday morning, there were queues going down the road for the baker's. There was a wonderful village shop, which was called Agate's or Agate's, depending how you pronounced it. And they sold everything you could think of. There was Stickland's, which was a draper's, which is now where there's a wonderful fish shop just opposite Cross House on the other side of the A30. There was a big ironmonger's. We had a bank. We had a post office. There was everything. There was a wonderful cobbler's. And also, if you wanted to have any alterations done, there were people who would alter clothes beautifully. And there was one lady, and I wish I could remember what her name was, but if you walk down to Kingsbury, and where all the new houses, Prancards Road and Red Wing Road, none of that existed. They were just fields and apple trees. And there was this lady, Ashford, Mrs. Ashford, and she lived in this cottage. And I used to go with Mummy because Mummy had things altered, and I think I had things made by her. And I remember she had beautiful pieces of china on her very high mantelpiece. Well, everything was high in those days. I couldn't even put my nose as high as the bank counter in those days. And it was all open, and to get to her, you picked your way through the cowpats to get through this field. And, of course, there's no field there anymore. It's all gone. And another lovely thing about North Street was it was lined with lime trees, which were pollarded at some time of the year, and they looked poor, bald things, and then suddenly they would burgeon forth. And then when you got up as far as the school, there were lovely horse chestnut trees up the left-hand side. And the person who lived in the top floor of Cross House was the headmistress of the school. And so it was, and my grandmother then moved into the bottom part. So it was a very matriarchal household.
Yes.
And then, when I think I was about seven, all the factory lorries were maintained where the stables were at the bottom of the drive. And this was turned into a big maintenance garage. And it was run by Mr. Williams, whose wife, Mrs. Williams, sold cakes and biscuits and ran a cafe at Cold Harbour. Her brother, Mr. Johnson, kept the mill down at the bottom, where the mill is now,
yes.
in fact.
Yeah.
And Mr. Williams used to allow me to go down and watch him sometimes doing the maintenance of the lorries. And I knew how to change a wheel, change the plugs, do what I could when the starter motor jammed, you put it in third and rocked it. Now, of course, it's all done on computer.
Yes.
I used to be quite a dab hand, and that gave me a great love for cars, and I still have a great love for cars. But it was an idyllic childhood. And I was taught, first of all, above a garage in a beautiful house which my grandfather had built in 1924, called Windy Ridge. Now, Windy Ridge is now called Kingsbury House, but it had a tennis court, and it had an orangery, and it had beautiful gardens and a tree house. Another idyllic spot for children. Yes. And I was taught, together with my cousins and my friends, from the age of 4 to the age of 7, by a lady who lived in Westview, called Mrs. Smith. Mrs. Smith seemed to know everything about everything. She was the most wonderful teacher. She was patient, she was kind, she was strict. There was no messing about. But she really taught us the fundamentals of all the important things. And again, I was very, very fortunate. And I also remember there was one of those wonderful wooden rocking horses. So at break time, we could take it in turns to ride on this amazing horse.
Yes, definitely.
And then, when I was 7, I went to Sherburn to school, to the convent. But Milbourne Port, for me, has always been a very, very happy place. And I think that's probably why I've a homing instinct to come back here again, having spent 40 years in London, trying to find fame and fortune. And then I moved back down here again. Of course, everything's changed. The number of houses is a desecration to a beautiful village. I honestly can't bear it. I think it should really be stopped. There are quite enough. And unfortunately, I'm dead against having any more. But one has to go on, I suppose. And now, what else can I tell you about Milbourne Port?
Off we go.
I spoke earlier about the fact that my grandfather had bought Cross House in 1898 from the Medlicott family. Well, his father had instructed him to go to Milbourne Port and rescue the factory, which was Thomas Ensor's factory, which was struggling badly. Now, he came from Tintinhull, where they already had a factory. And in fact, I think they had another one in Langport and Crewkerne. But there were many glove factories all over the place in that time. Sure. But this one was a big one.
Right.
And so my grandfather came and took over the running of Thomas Ensor. And it was quite a thriving business, but it needed an enormous amount of work doing to it.
Right.
And Grandpa married in 1900, and they lived in Cross House. And all his 4 children were born there. And the 2 sons, of course, eventually went into the business. Now, Ensor and Southcombe, which it was called later on, made gloves, they did tanning, and they also had a glue factory. Which was used for aircraft. And during the war, they made gloves, big gauntlet gloves, for the motorbike riders. Yeah. And they diversified in various ways to try and help the war effort. Mm-hmm. I was always fascinated going down to the factory. There were smells. My goodness, there were smells. The smell of the tanning, the smell of the glue, were pungent beyond belief. And also, of course, the machinery was terrifying. Mm. Because the big machines, all these skins, a lot of them came over from South Africa, from Port Elizabeth, where we had a fell mongery. Now, I meant to look that up to find out exactly what it means, but it's where I think the skins are cured. Mm. And they were sent over in huge, great vats in pickling. Mm. And again, that was a pungent smell.
Sure.
And some of them came over and they were rotten when they arrived. And of course, that was another story. But then all the fat and the hair had to be removed from these skins.
Yes.
And so the men who had huge, great aprons on threw these skins right to the back of these machines, and rollers with, I think, teeth grabbed the hair and the fat, and these men would pull the skins back out again. It was terribly dangerous. I mean, what health and safety would have to say now? I do not know. And, of course, fingers were lost. I think worse than that. Mm. But as a child, one doesn't really know. And then, of course, I used to enjoy watching all this process and the colouring of the skins. But then you would go upstairs to the machine departments, which were in a huge great building called Reynolds Loft. And that was on the right-hand side of the big gates that opened into the factory. Now, the gates were just as you go down West Hill from Pope's Lane. They opened straight ahead of you. And on the right-hand side was Reynolds Loft. On the left-hand side were the factory offices, which in fact had been the most beautiful house with an orchard all round it. And then you went on into the factory, and the big factory chimney with the huge engine that drove everything. I mean, it was enormous and belched smoke out of the top. But in this big, big three-storey building, there were floors of workers, and a lot of them were ladies with their machines. And I was amazed at the speed with which these ladies stitched round the gloves. And I think there were two pieces, or maybe three pieces. There was the thumb and the hand and a tiny bit of gusset that went between. But it was all done so quickly and so expertly. And there was a lovely gentleman called Mr. Gay. And I don't know whether his son is still alive. I do hope so. But when I went to school, Mummy said, well, you better go down to the factory, darling, and get yourself a pair of gloves. Now go and see Mr. Gay. Well, this was quite frightening. But I went up and walked through with all these ladies at their machines who all stared at me because, you know, I was this small child and I was the boss's niece. And so I went to this room at the end and Mr. Gay said, now, April, make a fist. And so I made a fist and he'd say, ah, you're up to a size six. And I thought, oh, I'm size six. And he found me a very nice pair of black gloves lined to keep me warm in the winter. And I said, Mr. Gay, can I possibly have a look at some of the... Well, there were boxes of the most beautiful colours, beautiful kid gloves that were all going off up to London town, I suppose. Mm. And they all went from Millbourne Port Station, which was a thriving concern in those days. Mm. And the factory lorries, which had been maintained down at the bottom of Crosshouse Drive, drove them off to Millbourne Port Station. But, I mean, those lorries drove all over the country, taking supplies here and there and everywhere. I don't know where all the glue went, apart from to the aircraft. But I think they went to Bristol. I think the glue went to Bristol, but I'm not quite sure. And there was another... There were a number of lovely characters. There was one very sweet lady called Mrs. Han, who I called Auntie Han. And she had a big black Labrador dog called Buddy. And she used to take me off for walks up East Hill and all through the orchards and round Everlanes. And there were always interesting walks all over. But there was another wonderful lady who used to she used to take my cousin Jane, who was my Uncle Stanley, who was also a director of the company, Stanley Southcombe. Now, Jane Southcombe was taken out by a lady called Tosie Dover, who lived in Rosemary Lane. Now, it was called Rosemary Lane in those days, not Rosemary Street. And she lived with her husband, Cyril, who worked at the factory, and her mother. I think her mother lived with her or just next door. But Tosie had come from Devon, and she had a wonderful accent. And I remember when I came back from London, having started as an actress and been to... Well, I think I was at drama school then. I think I was at RADA. And she would say, well, very new, April. Oh, it is nice to see you. Oh, it is lovely. Now then, How do you find that London town? Oh, no, I've never been to London town. Well, you'd have looked fine, my dear. I must tell our Cyril that I've seen it. Oh, she was lovely. Wonderful. She was fantastic. And I never knew why she always wore a white scarf round her throat. But I heard later that she'd gone into hospital for an operation because she had what was called a goitre. I don't know whether anyone has one of those anymore. Mm. I didn't know what it meant, but she always looked very smart because she always had a white scarf. Mm.
There's a swelling on the neck.
Yes, it's a swelling in the neck. Mm. Yes, I don't know whether it... I don't know what it was. Mm. But we used to go all round Millbourne Wick and up to where the springs were at Bradley Head and up over the downs. Oh, glorious walks all around the place. Idyllic childhood, yes, I think you could say.
Yes. And your friend Colleen.
Yes, at school, with Mrs. Smith, who taught us reading, writing and arithmetic, and a lot of common sense beside, aged five. I mean, I was aged five. There was my cousin Jane, who was there, and my cousin Margaret, who actually lived at Windy Ridge, now called Kingsbury House. She had three elder brothers, but we didn't associate with them because they were too old. I think that Alexander was the next one up, and he was 7 years older than me. Mind you, I was in love with him completely. Mrs. Smith... Now, what was I going to say?
About your friend.
Oh, the other friends who were with me, yes. There was Colleen Eaton Williams. Now, she was the daughter of the vicar. The vicar was actually the Reverend Holbrook, but he had married a lady, a widowed lady, and had a stepdaughter called Colleen Eaton Williams. And I'm still in touch with Colleen, and she's got a cottage not far away. She's just moved back down here again. It's funny, you see.
Yes,
it is a homing instinct.
Yes,
what's
your roots? And
then there was another very sweet friend called Susan Beale. And her mother was also a widow and lived on Sansom's Hill in a house that's just being done up. And that reminds me, just opposite that house is where the cross, the old stone cross, is parked now. But, of course, when I was growing up, it was actually at the cross roads, diagonally across from the town hall.
Yes.
Which made it very difficult for anything that was long, any long vehicle, to get round if coming from Sherburn and turning left up. And it was quite damaged. But it was a great place for the boys to hang out, and they lurked there and managed to gaze at all the girls wandering by. And a lot of bicycles were parked against there, and a lot of leering went on. And it was almost running a gauntlet getting from Cross House across to the paper shop, because one knew one was going to have all sorts of comments and things. But it was all fun and very innocent in those days.
Yes. Hmm. Wasn't it?